There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From the Apostrophe Podcast Network. One,
two, three. They all come from the unknown north. Talent, drive, and a pride worth paying for. But just because they're above the 49 parallel doesn't mean we shouldn't celebrate them just as well. So give it up for these Canucks, because our self-promotion sucks. And if they went away, we sure wouldn't miss them.
Do not go.
The Canadian Star System. Hello again, and welcome to the Canadian Star System, a podcast where we speak with some of Canada's most talented people and try to figure out what makes them so good and what makes Canada so bad at celebrating our own. Each episode, our star not only shines, but also shines the spotlight on another talent who they think is a star worthy of wishing the best of success. I'm your host, Steve Patterson, and if you don't know me by now, then you will never, never, never know me. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I think I was supposed to sing that. If you don't know those lyrics from the classic Simply Red song, then either you don't like music or you were born after 1989. With me on the podcast, as usual, is my producer, Diana Francis, who was for sure born well before 1989. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Steve. Yes, that's correct. I'm old. I remember that song.
You're
well.
Vintage.
I'm very vintage, like a nice wine that hasn't corked yet. But I'm very excited that we're talking about music today, Steve.
Me too.
We have one of my favorite musicians on the show today. And it gets, I always love finding out from people. It's a great conversation starter, icebreaker. What the first concert you ever saw live in person was. So my question to you, Steve, because I don't think I've ever asked this. What's the first concert you ever saw?
Oh, you're going to ask me that question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I got to think back. I went to a lot of pretty interesting concerts because I have a brother that's like 6 years older than me. And he would take me to concerts instead of babysitting me like he was supposed to. So the first concert I ever saw, I'm pretty sure it was Rush. I saw Rush
when
I was like 11. At Exhibition Stadium in Toronto with my brother and a whole bunch of other males. And probably so much contact secondhand marijuana high that I should probably be a lot smarter today. But that was the first concert I saw. What about you?
It wasn't Rush because for years, the running joke with my friends was that I couldn't get to a radio knob fast enough to turn off Rush if it came on. And then my previous boyfriend was a huge Rush fan. And I'm pretty sure that that's why he dated me, because he was American and I was Canadian. And he was like, you must know Rush. And he dragged me to a Rush concert and I hated it.
How did this
torture.
Turn into a Rush bash?
Rush, but they're great guys. They're great guys.
That is the worst thing to say. Like, they're one of the best bands. You're like, they're so nice, though. They're such
so
great
nice.
Fellas. They should start a great fellas band.
I will say what I enjoyed most about the concert when I did see Rush was watching a father-son duo. The son was maybe 10 years old and the son air drummed through the whole thing and the dad air bass guitared through the whole thing. And I watched them. It was I was watching them having a father-son bonding moment. It was beautiful.
And that's probably what my brother and I were doing, except there was no air instruments. He was just passing me a joint. You know what? This is let's segue into our current guest, shall we? Let's get rolling on this because you say she is one of your favorite performers. Not only is she one of my favorite performers, I'm going to one up you here, Diana. She is one of my favorite people that I've ever spoken to. We had the opportunity to speak on a different project. She's a celebrated singer, songwriter, a noted musical arranger who works as easily and frequently with symphony orchestras as I do with opening beer bottles. She is an advocate for performers' rights, a champion of emerging artists, and now, maybe most importantly, a brand new mom with a voice so clean it gleams. It's the one and only Sarah Sleen.
Yay!
Yeah!
Woo! That intro was amazing!
Do you like that? I will gladly come on the road with you when this is all over, if you like, and introduce every concert like that, Sarah.
Please do. Can we do an episode of The Debaters, too?
Absolutely. I know that you are very outspoken. We would love to get you. Maybe we'll get you against one of the other Sarahs. Maybe we'll do a Sarah off.
Oh, who's the most iconic Sarah? I love it.
Okay, Diana, this is not that show. Come on. This is the Canadian Star System. Now, Sarah, last time we spoke.
Yes.
Since then, you did some live performing. You got to get out there to Burlington, I saw.
Yes.
You've done some virtual performing. You got yet another Juno nomination. And there was one. What was the one other thing?
I have Canadian my Screen
Award. Oh, you had a baby.
Award.
You
oh,
had
yeah,
a baby.
That too.
Yeah.
What? Yes.
Which one of those events would you say has changed your daily life the most?
Well, gee, the child. The child. The most amazing thing. I'm operating at about 42% cognitive capacity right now.
The fact that you could say cognitive capacity, I am very impressed.
That is impressive. I could never say that before any
but
children. Yeah.
She's so wonderful. We're madly in love with her. We haven't slept. We're sort of delirious with fatigue, but it's amazing. It's, you know, as all parents know, it's just miraculous.
And what is your lovely baby's name again? Did you mind?
Her name is Abigail. We call
Abigail.
Her Abby.
I love it. Abigail, middle name, can we ask? Is that prying too much?
Abigail Mary Hope. And the Mary is after my beloved grandmother, who I wrote a song about, who's, you know, one of my absolute heroes. And also it's Abby's dad's mom. So Abby's grandmother's name is Mary.
Oh,
and
perfect.
Hope is my middle name. So Abigail Mary Hope.
How perfect is that? Of course Hope is your middle name. Of course it is. Sarah Hope Sleen. Of course it is. Where's Abby now? Is there a chance that this interview may be preempted by Abby? Because I understand if it is.
No. Well, see, we had to, now that I'm a parent, I have to figure these things out. Life happens in, you know, 2-hour intervals because she gets hungry. So she's downstairs with her grandma right now, and we have backup supply in the fridge. So I'm prepared. I'm a mom now. I have to be.
I love it. I just love that we talked a little bit about kids in our last interview, and then and then here you go and you make one. Congratulations, Sarah.
Thank you, Steve.
And I think that Abby's got an incredible life ahead of her as the daughter of Sarah. Okay. Let's not make this about her. She's got to earn her own way, all right? We'll have her on down the road. Tell us about your latest Juno nomination, which was a collaboration with Symphony Nova Scotia.
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited about this. And it's, you know, it's so funny. This is just the way of the universe. I had stopped really paying attention to the Junos many, many years ago when I stopped being nominated for them because I just, you know, I was following my own path and it just never really involved me. You know, it kind of left my radar. So I was just in my house coat washing the floor when my phone started to blow up and people were like, congratulations, congratulations. And I was like, what for? You know, and people were like, Juno nomination. And I'm like, cool, who? You know, and they're like, you idiot. And I did not expect this at all. I was so excited to make this recording. It's a long, involved project with so many moving parts. The first part of the recording was done in 2012. and the second part of the recording in 2018. So the entire project spans about 8 years. There are so many people involved. A great producer at CBC by the name of Jeff Riley. This was his brainchild. One of my mentors and absolutely favorite people, composers, professors in the world. His name is Christos Hatzis. This was something that he composed for the orchestra. And I got to sing it. And he, you know, was delighted to work. This is kind of unusual in the classical world. He wanted a voice that wasn't a classical voice. He wanted someone who was musically literate, who knew their way around an orchestra and a score, but had something else to offer, a different kind of vocalizing. And it was just such a thrill to work on this thing. And I had no idea that it would be nominated for Juno. It was a very pleasant surprise.
What a lovely, lovely way that that all came about. And it's, isn't it the best when you're not expecting it like that?
I'm kind of, this is the universe, right? Like, I think when you just let go of things and you just let go, it comes to you in the easiest way possible. Like, you know what I mean? Like, without even trying.
Actually, I do know what you mean. We're talking about cleaning floors. Sometimes I just let go of the fluid that cleans the floor and then I leave it there because have you really spilled anything if you spill cleaning fluid on the floor? I don't think so.
I think this is also such a beautiful indication of what our star system is like in Canada, mm-hmm. that, you know, one of our most talented artists in the country cleans her own floors.
Yes, ma'am. You know? Yes, ma'am, I do.
Right down to earth. Getting her hands dirty.
I love it. Getting her hands dirty while her floors are getting clean. Now, listen, the Juno Awards, we're talking about these now. For those who don't know, the Juno Awards are the Canadian Grammy Awards. They're what we give to our musicians each year. And, you know, recently the Junos was in the news in a roundabout way because the Weeknd, Canadian, fabulous Canadian performer, felt slighted by the Grammys, said he's not going to go for Grammys anymore, but he's nominated for several Junos and he's very happy about it. Did these Juno Awards mean more to Canadians, do you think, than any other awards?
Well, I think the Canadian Screen Awards means a lot to our creators for the screen as well and the Doras for the mm-hmm. stage artists out there. But, you know, I think that Canadian musicians in particular have had massive global success. Like if you just think about mm-hmm. even the last 25 years, there have just been, you know, superstars, The Weeknd, Celine Dion, Shania Twain, Alanis Morissette. There are so many musicians in this country, Broken Social Scene, like all of these bands and artists that have had massive, massive impact. It's crazy to me that we, as you say, have such difficulty celebrating them. I'm glad to see that the Junos is now a lot glitzier. You know, there's a lot more attention being paid to making it a really glamorous show because I think that's kind of the reason we have so much talent in this country is because people kind of look around and go like, well, oh, I guess, you know, no one's making a big fuss about anyone. I'll go back to my studio and get better. Like, I remember going to playing shows in New York in the late 90s and early 2000s and feeling like, wow, okay, we're going into the heart of the big leagues. Let's bring our A game. And being all freaked out and intimidated and going to play, say, an open mic or something like a bunch of dates to fill in a tour, right? And you'd go in there and you'd play and you'd see the first three acts and you'd be like, what? You know, yeah. Really? Like I have 10 friends who blow these acts out of the water and everyone in Canada just doesn't even know how good they are because everyone is just looking around at their peers going, oh, that's how good you have to be. That's just normal. And then you go into a much larger pool and you see, oh, wow, like Canada, everyone is so good. Everyone is so good.
That's our soundbite. Sorry, Diana, that's our soundbite. That's it. That's our promotion for this show.
Yeah. Perfect time. And because of this, you know, beautiful, I guess, British heritage of this extreme humility that we all have, it really does kind of work in a vicious cycle, right? Everyone is so extremely humble that they, you know, just keep wanting to be better. They don't deserve this or that. They just are focused on being better. And it's only until you, it's not until you go into these larger markets and you, you know, if you tour in Europe or you tour in the States, you start seeing what's actually out there and you realize like your contact list in your iPhone has like maybe 30 geniuses in it.
Well, my, I don't know if mine does, but yours might. Yeah, it's mostly my high school buddies and they would not, I don't think, unless you count Apple Store's geniuses.
There's that humility again, Steve Patterson.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I'm right here, Steve.
I have Diana's the smartest person in my phone. What does that tell you? Now, I'm really happy to hear you say that, Sarah, of the music world, because in the comedy world, I find it very similar. Look, there is a lot of great comedy anywhere, but Canada, I will put a Canadian team of comedians up against any comedy team in the world. And as you say, I've been down to Los Angeles and been on shows and thought, wow, this is a, it's a showcase show. There's going to be some really good stuff on here. And it just didn't, what didn't blow me away. And it's not slighting the others. It's just, we have it so, so good here. And it's from all across Canada. So let me ask you this. Toronto gets a lot of heat for people, you know, things being Toronto centric, or at least it did. I mean, not during the pandemic, it's very much the opposite. It's the literal last place you want to be in the world. But when we get to the other side of this, and there will be another side, do you think that musicians or artists in any area in Canada have to be based in or near Toronto for their work?
Definitely not. Definitely not. I live in Toronto, but I live in Toronto because of the proximity I have to other artists. I mean, we are on the crest of virtual technologies really starting to sink in and penetrate the national consciousness or the collective consciousness, right? So it won't be weird or feel distant in 5 years. It will just be absolutely normal, right? So you really can probably live anywhere, but I'm in my 40s and I still have the old school thing of like, I like to be in a room playing with musicians. I like to be in a room feeling the audience react to me or feeling their vibes or participating in that exchange. So I think I will always live in a major urban center. I mean, at one moment in my life, I owned a farm.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I thought you were.
I owned a farm, a 26-acre farm for a hot minute, as they say.
How long ago was that, Sarah?
Did I buy it in 2015, 2013? Not that long ago. And I had it for about 3 years and completely renovated a house and did all of that, the stuff that you do. But I realized that the farm reality and the farm fantasy, never the twain shall meet. So, but what I missed when I was out there, I mean, I would constantly be driving into the city or into other small cities to do performances and things like that. But I missed the ferment, the sort of accidental mixing of like the being around people, even if they're just in coffee shops or, do you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
being 100%. In a neighborhood where there was a certain amount of density, I feel like that fuels me as an artist. Of course, we all need vacations from density and, you know, urban environments in general. But I feel inspired there when there's a lot of different perspectives. There's a lot going on. Who knows if cities will still look that way after what we've experienced in this particular moment in history? Who knows, right? But up until now, I've, you know, pretty much an urban cat, I would say.
And I wanted to ask you, in terms of virtual performing versus live, and we obviously know what your preference is, especially because you're a person that can work with large orchestras, and there's no substitute for that than a live room, obviously. But I have to say, right after we spoke last time, I caught your first virtual show on Side Door Access, great website, by the way, to catch shows of musicians and comedians. And I was blown away by how intimate the experience was, just you and your piano. And it wasn't just like we were in the front row. It was like I was on stage with you. It was so close. And it was as if you were serenading me personally, which you did earlier that week, because on the show you sang a song just to me. So maybe that was the experience. But is that the feedback that you've gotten from fans? Because I thought it was really, I know it's not the same as live, but in certain ways it was incredible. Sound was good. You were right there and it was like it was being performed for just me, which again, I just want to point out to everyone listening, Sarah did perform a song for just me once. So the rest of you can suck it. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, you know, I do think we're at a really interesting moment in history right now. We're still animals, right? We are still mammals. We still have a central nervous system and we still have all of this unspoken language happening between bodies, right? So that's why there is this, the primacy and the specialness of sharing space, actual physical three-dimensional space. That is always going to be kind of special to us because we're animals. But having said that, technology does, I mean, the kind of concert that you're describing, the side door access concert we did, the camera was 2 feet from my face, which is like not the way you're going to see a physical concert in reality and not the way I'm ever going to perform. And it was a kind of disarming intimacy, right? That you would still feel, like I still felt it in my central nervous system. And I'm sure the listeners were saying they still got hair standing up on their arms and, you know, they were moved or they were, you know, they felt things. So it is amazing to me that human beings who have been locked into this sort of three-dimensional mammalian reality, we are finding ways to almost hack that. And I think we're just on the crest of it now, and we're only going to figure out ways to make that even more real feeling. And I mean, I don't know if that's a wholly good thing. Who knows? You know, it is still a very protected kind of intimacy. Like we have the barrier of the screen, which I think a lot of people hide behind. I mean, just go look at Twitter and you'll see the results of being able to hide behind a little avatar and speak your mind to the world. But this is just early days. Mm. And so all of these things are going to progress and morph and evolve. And it's kind of exciting / terrifying to see where that will go.
Can I say just really quickly, Sarah, when you're talking about the intimacy, that there is still intimacy in those virtual performances, there's something that I recognized as an audience member that I don't know that you as a performer have seen, but I've seen several of concerts on Side Door Access. Great website. Awesome way to see things.
They
as
get
you
it.
Mentioned.
They get it. Okay. Mark that down. They should be sponsoring this. You're right. Yes.
But one of the things that I noticed, so when I love live concerts, I love live music, and it's very much, you know, you're in a crowd and you're all facing towards the audience and you might be there with a friend and you can check in with a friend and go, oh, how are you enjoying this? But it would be very rude to stare at another audience member and watch their experience of the show. But with Side Door, great website. It's really quite an amazing, it's really unbelievable.
Honestly, they haven't paid us anything yet, so stop.
But one of the things that I experienced was when it's a concert where they, whoever is producing it is flipping between different audience reaction screens. I, as the viewer, I'm not just watching Sarah, the performer. I'm also watching now Steve watch Sarah. And you catch these little intimate moments in people's living rooms where they're slow dancing or somebody's like cooking a meal and watching it. And and it's like you're peering into these like windows of people's homes and watching them experience things. It's this other layer of intimacy that I never would have imagined was
a thing. That is what some of my friends dropped in on a few of those shows. Ended up doing 3 last year. My friends dropped in and that's exactly what they said. They said they found that actually profoundly moving, being able to look at someone, at a stranger's face while they were hearing a song that meant something to them, you know, like being inches away essentially from this person, you know, having a very intense experience. It was really, you know, new. This is a new experience. This is what I mean by like we are on the crest of this wave and who knows where it's going, but it is very intimate, extremely so. Yes.
you know, on a sidebar of that, I did enjoy that. I enjoyed watching people watch the show, entire families watching the show. And then there was a beautiful moment, which I thought it was a beautiful, just a beautiful, real, honest moment. The alarm on your dishwasher yes. went off during the show. And it's just like, beep, beep. And you kept playing. And at the end, yeah. you're like, I'm pretty sure that was my dishwasher. And I was just like, we're in her home. Like, we're in her yeah. home and she's doing this concert for us. So
there's a humanity to it that like you would not have expected that you'd think, oh, we have to do these things online now. They're virtual. What a limiting experience is going to be. And you have no idea what is on the other side of it. Like the other ways mm-hmm. that we find as humans to connect. Being an eternal optimist, I love that element
interesting.
Of it.
Well, I find too that like social media, human beings we are very masked. We all, you know, to quote T.S. Eliot, you know, we all prepare a face to meet the faces that we meet, right? Like we all in some way need a bit of a barrier. And I think, you know, to have a line between public and private is essential to mental health. Like I absolutely think that that is key. However,
yeah.
there are these ways where we are becoming essentially more and more unmasked. Like I have seen people posting things on IGTV that I am like, I'm almost uncomfortable for them. It is so personal and it is so, you know, as a performer, you have a sort of manicured image to present to the world. And that's getting thinner and thinner and thinner. And in some cases, they just drop it all together. And this can connect people in new and excellent ways. And they find all this, you know, support and connection. But at the same time, it's like, it's a bit terrifying. You know, it's terrifying for me. I like to try and keep that line, just make sure it's there. But when my dishwasher goes off and I'm like, hey, babe, can you turn that off? You know, like, it is pretty cool, right? Like,
I agree with you completely that there's, I think moving forward, it might be a bit of a hybrid between live performances and, hey, in between live, not the worst thing if you want to do a quick concert, try out some new stuff for fans that want to hear new stuff, you know? So I think you're absolutely bang on there. Let's shift gears a little bit here. In addition to all your fabulous work as a musician, you've also recently put your hat in the ring for a leadership position with SOCAN. First of all, can you explain to the listeners what SOCAN is, and then tell us what you would like to do if you can get into a leadership position there?
Yes. Well, it's a bit of a long shot because the people running this year, there are so many amazing, super qualified, excellent, excellent candidates. So if I lose, I'm happy. Either way, whoever gets in there, you're in good hands. I know, right?
Sarah, you're being too Canadian. You're being too Canadian, and I will work with you as your campaign
you're
manager because that is a terrible slogan.
I've been a member of SOCAN since I started in this business, and they're a performing rights organization. They are the organization in Canada that collects for composers and authors. So people that write their own music or lyrics, people that write cues for television shows, films, like these are people that are making music, authoring music, right? So it's extremely, extremely important for artists to be involved in this particular organization because it's essentially the copyright of Canadian music makers. And this is often the bread and butter of that particular kind of creator. Me, I've always written my own songs. So you know, back in the day when I was making albums on Warner, these would be substantial checks with which I could finance, you know, I could pay my whole band, I could pay managers, I could, it financed, helped to finance a career. And lately with YouTube, Spotify, streaming, all of the digital massive wave of change that has come over the past 10 to 15 years, that is getting harder and harder to track. To make sure that all of the money flowing from those particular rights flows to the hands of the creators. And it's become very difficult to just navigate the absolute rat's nest maze of royalties, rights, and getting these people the money that they need to continue making a living in the creative environment. So I see young artists, the generation below me, trying to make things work in either film composing or, you know, being an artist or even a songwriter for other artists. And it's getting harder and harder and harder because those royalties are getting lost in the ether. They're streaming rates have plummeted. YouTube is not being the player that they could be in this particular space. It's all a whole bunch of complex legislation that is in the middle of being changed right now in Canada. But it's really important to have artists and creative people on these boards who understand, you know, how things have changed, how they need to be updated and modernized so that we can protect being an artist and making a living as an artist in Canada.
I mean, look, there might be other worthy candidates, but I can't imagine anyone more qualified or passionate than you. So with all due respect to the other candidates who are not on this show right now, I hope you lose.
We'll be right back after these messages. Hey, Steve, don't you hate it when you stop getting nominated for awards?
Well, they never really started for me, so it's not like I've noticed what I wasn't already getting, no.
Well, should you start getting nominated for awards and then stop paying attention to them because they stop paying attention to you?
Huh?
Then it's time to put on that house coat and start washing the floor because you need Make It Clean with Sarah Sleen, the all-purpose cleaner.
Wait a minute, this stuff really exists?
Sure doesn't. Huh. Nothing will make the Canadian entertainment industry pay attention to you faster than literally being brought to your knees cleaning up your own mess.
Well, you know what I always say, Diana, just let go of the cleaning fluid and leave it there. Because have you really spilled anything if you've spilled cleaning fluid?
Is that what you always say?
Said it twice in this podcast already.
You know, Steve, Make It Clean with Sarah Sleen doesn't just work on floors to get you a Juno nomination. Try it on your walls and watch the Canadian Screen Awards roll in. Just imagine what you'll get nominated for if you use it to clean your toilet.
A Golden Globe?
Exactly.
Nice.
So if your career in floors are looking a little dull, then shine them up using Make It Clean with Sarah Sleen. If you're going to do a side door concert from home, you better make sure your home looks good.
Good point.
And coming soon, Super Clean Sarah Sleen Baby Wipes. This Canadian awards season, you are going to clean up.
Aw, you think so?
Oh, not you, Steve. Talented people.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And now, back to the show.
Let's segue into a little section, because I would love to talk to you for many more hours, but we've got a great guest that you're going to introduce us to, and I'm very excited for everyone to get to know more about
So am
about
I. Guest.
But first, Sarah, we've got this section where I ask quick questions, and we call it Quick Questions.
Quick Questions!
And here comes the first one, inspired by an earlier section in our interview.
Okay.
In a Sarah off between yourself, Sarah Harmer, and Sarah McLachlan, who emerges the most Sarah?
Ooh, McLaughlin.
Really?
She's the first. Come on. She's the first. We bow down to her.
But you wrote a song called Sarah.
If there's, this is true.
If there's a Sarah Palooza, then that's the song that closes it.
There are a lot of Sarah songs, you know. There are a lot.
Are there?
I mean, Bob Dylan, Air Supply.
I didn't know Bob Dylan's was called Sarah. Though. I couldn't understand what he was saying. Okay, the most, as an arranger, the most difficult instrument to write an arrangement for.
Ooh, any of the winds.
Any of the winds.
Yes.
Any of the woodwinds. Of all the performers you have performed with, who stands out as the most fun?
Oh, geez. Yeah. You know, that's an easy one. Hawksley okay. Workman. He's a very, very funny man. I kind of think that if he didn't do music, he could have a career in comedy.
You know what? I was hoping you would say Hawksley because I want to butter him up because we want him as a guest. If you were not a musician, what job would you most like to do?
Oh, that's an easy one too. Do you know what I would do? I would study the brain, neurology, neuroscience. This has fascinated me since my 20s. I considered going back to school for it. I'm just so fascinated with how this lump of flesh produces the vast and mysterious phenomena we call consciousness. Like it's endlessly interesting to me.
I never know exactly what you're going to say, but the answer is always even better than I thought it would be. You're the deepest person that I have any conversation with. No offense, Diana. We have great talks too. Yeah.
Fair enough. I want to study your brain, Steve, just to figure out how
to
you
see
can
if
have
there is one.
Just to figure out how you can have so many unread emails.
Okay. You know what? This isn't about me. This is not about me. Last question, Sarah.
Yes.
And I'm toddling between two of them. You know, you gave a deep answer last time, so we'll just do this one. What is your favorite song of yours or another's to perform? Name one.
Favorite song to perform. Oh, geez. Well, if it's with an orchestra, I would have to say a song called The Cosmic Ballet.
Love it. Love that song. I love it. Mm-hmm. And it's the Irish Buds, my favorite line. And I know that you took that from Irish literature, but you made it your own. So. The right answer was the right words.
Oh.
Performing to Steve Patterson by himself.
Darn, I got that one wrong.
Love that. I love that song so much. I love all your stuff, but that one really speaks to me. Okay, now just before we get you to introduce our second featured guest today, we need you to complete a couple sentences for us just off the top of your head, please, Sarah.
Lightning round. Woo!
The Canadian star system is...
bogus.
Very quick. Very
dysfunctional?
Quick. No, it's one. You say, we got our soundbite. And being the next door neighbor to the United States is like.
Ooh, what's the like a meth lab something apartment above a meth lab? I'm not gonna say that because it's too easy. But I would just say it's like you're next door to you're in a semi-detached, right?
Okay.
You're in a semi-detached house and you're not sure if your neighbors are in a satanic cult. Which, you know what, actually speaks to me because I am in a semi-detached and I was next door to neighbors who had human skeletons on their porch. Year round. I'm not joking.
Wow.
This was the Halloween house on the street, and I was on the other side of the wall. So it hits close to home, that question.
Oh, my God. Hilarious.
They just moved, though. They just moved.
Hilarious. Yes, to the cemetery.
Right in time for my child.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. And Abby thanks you. Sarah, thank you so much. You're not going anywhere. You're just segueing into the guest that you brought on for us, but always a pleasure to speak to you. And now, if you would do us the honors of introducing your featured guest, please.
Well, I am so, so excited to introduce your audience to this guy. As an artist, he does not need any amplification because he's already a super famous, super accomplished actor in film, television, and on the stage. Sings, acts, all the things. He is also now running to become a liberal politician. And this is what I absolutely love about this particular artist. You know, we get told as artists to stay in our lane, just shut up and sing, et cetera, like what could you possibly bring to the political sphere? And in his case, I think he brings so much. He brings fierce intelligence, a unique perspective, an artist's perspective, an immigrant's perspective, but also just, you know, such progressive ideas and such inspiring ideas. The ideas I think we need right now. So I'm super, super excited to introduce the formidable Ali Mohman.
Yes.
Yes, sir. What an introduction. Hello.
Wow.
Hello, Ali.
I'm honestly moved. Sarah, thank you so much. Hello, Steve.
Oh my goodness. What
How
are
you doing?
I can't even get her to say my name, and you got that introduction. That's the power of Ali Mohman. That we call it momentum. The momentum.
My campaign team is working on all these things. Like, this is the moment, momentum,
that's so good.
You know. Yeah. Don't waste the moment.
Well, don't get Sarah to write your campaigns. We've already heard what hers would be. Someone else will probably win it. She writes a lot of great things.
I'm not sure if you've heard Steve make his way around a pun, but he might be useful to you, Ali.
Yeah.
Or directly the opposite. Now, listen. We will get to your political standpoint and inspiration very shortly. And there's a lot at stake here, Ali, because I do happen to live in your riding,
I perked up when you told me.
As we've recently discovered. But let's talk about your family roots, first of all. You came here from Iran with your family when you were 3 years old because your family wanted to carve out a better life. Can you talk a little bit about that experience growing up and was Canada a welcoming environment for you by and large, or what was your experience?
My family came, when I was 3 years old. And for the first kind of, period, I would say first couple months, we lived, I think, in like an unfinished basement apartment. You know, it was just tough. It was me, my two older sisters and my mother. And, I have so many vivid memories of that experience. I remember, the first time I saw furniture coming to my house. It was a couch that my sister and my father found outside, and they brought it in. I remember the first time I had McDonald's. My dad got us just one McChicken because that's all we could afford. And I'll never forget sitting outside and that McChicken falling on the ground. And my dad, and my dad picking up and says, we got to have it. And, it was very difficult. I feel like I'm talking to a therapist.
That's all right. I'll send you my fee later, but go ahead. We've got the full hour.
I will tell you, my family is an exceptional bunch of people. Whatever they went through, they tried to, I think, shelter me as much as possible. And they really tried to be there for me. It's the quintessential immigrant success story, where we are now compared to where we were. is a big shift. And I know we talk, I don't want to go into the politics now, but I will say, one of the reasons why Parkdale High Park is so important to me, it's full of people like my dad who are new citizens who came to this country with $100 in their pocket. But of course, my worry is that if they worked as hard as my father and had the aptitude of my father, could they find that success? And now we are in a state where that is in question. Mobility isn't what it used to be. So as much as I revere the immigrant experience of my family, I go, wouldn't it be great if everyone had that opportunity?
Well said. Now, I want to make sure I get this right. Is your mom a teacher? Is she an educator now?
She was. No. She was an educator in Iran. But then when she came here, she basically she needed to do a twofer. So she was like, how can I get a job and also take care of these little munchkins around me? So she got a job at a daycare. So she would take me and my middle sister, who's a year older than me. I have two older sisters. They're amazing. And she would take me to daycare.
So she wasn't a teacher here in Canada?
No. Her kind of focus was just, we have three children and she has to do what she has to do.
Which is
why we need affordable and available childcare.
Amen.
Yeah, amen.
You're absolutely preaching to the converted.
Because
here.
I will say, listen, my father is great. My father has built a successful company, but my mother is better than he is. So, just imagine what she could have done.
My wife is home right now taking care of our two young girls. And if it weren't for the moms in general, but especially moms of young children, keeping families going while we try to keep everything else going, nothing would work. So I really do hope that people realize that. And most of all, I hope that employers realize that and hire moms out of this, but it's such a challenge. I agree with you.
Well, you know, it's if women participated as equally as men in the labor market, it's $100 billion extra dollars a year in the economy.
Yep.
Wow. That's a fact.
Know,
that's a stat.
It's, as a new mother, I get to watch my partner continue. I mean, his life has changed and upended as well, but he continues to work 9 to 5, you know, uninterrupted. And if it was the same for women, obviously the child desperately needs the mom more at once it's born. But I mean, it's exactly as Ali says, like, this has been the answer all along. It almost feels like, you know, like women have been saying this for so long. Like, if I can continue earning, if I can, you know, so many more options for families, and that would be that much more skilled workers in the workforce, that much more economic output.
Patriarchy is hard to break. But, you know, that's just where it is. That's just what it is.
Well, yeah. You know, everyone needs to realize when the fight is theirs as well, and to join in. And I think, you know, we've realized that with a lot of different things, with women's rights, with childcare, and especially with Black Lives Matter, Indigenous Lives Matter movement. This isn't just their fight if you're not part of that group. You have to join actively in it. So I'm
100%.
And I will say one thing though. I think it's important for us to articulate equity, which is what we're discussing, as a get. It's not a give. Because you know, as I said, you know, when we do affordable and available childcare, $100 billion extra dollars into our economy. And another really one of the best articulations of equity was from a guy named Warren Buffett, who is quite the capitalist. But they asked him about the Me Too movement and also Black Lives Matter, and he says, "I'm all for it." And they were like, "Why?" He goes, "More talent."
Yes.
We have been living our entire existence with 50% of the talent churning
Amen.
It. Imagine what happens when 100% churns it. I think, and this is, we're going to get to this, like why we need to have, you know, the artistic vision and thought in politics, is that we as artists believe not in finite possibilities, but infinite possibilities. We inherently believe in abundance, that there's always more. And that's what we need to push for. So we need to not just articulate, you know, equity as this thing that is the just thing to do. It is, but it's also the most advantageous thing to do for all of us. It lifts everybody up.
Do you see why I'm championing this man? Oh my
yes.
God. Listen to this.
We're all championing each other here. This yeah. is the worst debate I've ever moderated. You're saying the exact same thing from the opposite sides. And Ali, you skipped down and answered questions 5, 6, and 7 in that one. So
oh, yeah.
I'll just get to the next one. Not only is the equity in the gender wages and gender roles necessary, but it's necessary for our protection, because your big sister protected you growing up, right?
She did.
Yeah.
Yes, she did. She is, I consider my eldest sister, Sherry, it's not even a sister. It's like a complete kind of guardian angel to me. And she truly, truly was there for me. I'll tell you another thing about my sister, though, is that my mother became a young grandmother. She was a grandma, and like she was 47 or 48 years old. And she became a grandmother. And at that time, my sister was like 25 years old when she had my niece. And so my sister still had work to do. She had still school to go to. She had to like figure it out. And now she's like a, you know, big name in a bank. But if she, again, we're going back to like that. It was amazing and it's a beautiful story. But what was it when you break it down? It was not even affordable. It was free. But it was childcare.
Mm-hmm.
Childcare allowed my sister to thrive. And if my sister didn't have childcare, she didn't have my mother. I
agree with you. And I can hear the passion in your voice. And I don't think enough.
That's just
people...
my microphone. It's a special microphone.
Yeah, so you've got the passion filter.
I put on a switch.
Sarah's got it too. Sarah always sounds so passionate, but it's just a filter on her microphone. I finally know.
Sarah's a genius. Let's just say that right now.
You know
I was listening
she
to the first 30, 40 minutes. I was like, holy moly.
I know.
This woman.
And she should run SOCAN. And I'm gonna find out who the other nominees are and get them to drop out. Look, we are still straddling the roles between actor, performer, and now aspiring politician. So I just want everyone to realize that in your repertoire, not only do you have your degree in performing arts, you've had a lot of amazing roles, one of them being as Nep in the Oscar-nominated Biba Boys.
Well, it was an Oscar nominated. Deepa was Oscar nominated, but
it doesn't
no,
matter.
Wasn't.
It doesn't matter, Ali. They're not.
Yeah, we
you
won
know,
8 Oscars. We won them all. We swept.
There. You know, you're not supposed to do false things as a politician, but I can. I'm just a comedian smartass.
Don't want Nepgate to bring me down.
No,
I don't want Oscar
right.
Gate to bring me down.
I'll take the heat. You won the Oscar, the first of your 7. But you were the Biba Boys is a very popular movie and basically depicted a criminal family. Is that safe to say?
It was Indo-Canadian gang in yes. In Vancouver. Yes.
Now, do you feel like, this is just hypothetically, do you feel like sure. a criminal background could help you in a political career?
Who's our premier?
Oh, Ali said it, I didn't.
We're in Ontario, by the way.
Let's see what happens by the time this episode airs.
That's right. That's right. Yeah,
yeah, we yeah, may yeah. have a different answer to who's our premier.
Maybe our yeah. maybe our former one. Let's jump ahead, if we could, to the one section that affects performing artists the most, which you mm-hmm. have been integral in moving forward. The Arts New Deal mm-hmm. Initiative, where you mm-hmm. argue, and you won't get an argument from me or anyone that's assembled here on this. Hey, yeah. a job in the arts is a job. It's an important economic mm-hmm. sector, and you've got to fight. We've got to fight to make sure it's recognized as such. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, please?
So in general, it's important to recognize that culture, particularly in a city, and particularly as we continue forward with, like, you know, working from home, which will continue, FYI, we have to start to ask ourselves, you know, what is a city? What is a country? What is the reason we exist? And cultural infrastructure is a really big thing. So in the 1930s, FDR had a program called the Works Progress Administration, in which he elevated a violin and a shovel to be the exact same thing. So yes, you know, there was a lot of unemployed people, so he put them to work, but there was also a large swath of unemployed artists. And what he did was the government basically hired them to make art. And it started the careers of, you know, Mark Rothko, Jackson Pollock. It started the careers because there was a mandate to get racialized and marginalized communities to make art, namely women and Black people. It started the careers, for instance, of Dorothy West, who is an African-American novelist. I mean, they just got WPA grants. Orson Welles did this famous, I could say it on a podcast, I can't say it on stage, but he did a famous production of Macbeth. And literally, there was like 30,000 in Harlem, all Black, and 30,000 people were like lined up on opening night to kind of see it. It was a huge kind of a cultural infrastructure project. And what it actually did was it pushed that country forward. And it's what really makes us identify with America as the place to be. I always tell people, listen, people don't want to go to America because the healthcare is cheap and the university tuition is nice. No, people are going to America for a story. And it's important, I think, for us as Canadians. You know, we're on the Canadian Star System. One of the ways to probably make a Canadian Star System is to write a story and to really view culture as like the bedrock and foundation of this country, and particularly for a city, and particularly like a riding like Parkdale High Park. I mean, give people a reason to go out, give people a reason to engage. Mm-hmm. The Arts New Deal is a big thing, and something like an arts and culture tax credit is a big thing to give everybody a little bit of money that they can go engage in local art and local culture.
Now, I just have to point out one little thing here that you might not know, but I have to represent my comedians. I belong to an organization called CASC, Canadian Association of Stand-Up Comedians, which sounds like it's made up, but it's not. And our main mandate is because the Canada Council does not recognize comedy as a performing art.
That's crazy.
So right now you couldn't get a grant to do a stand-up show?
No.
No.
No. No.
That's not, you could get a grant to do a TV show. You could get a grant to write a song. You could do a grant, but you cannot get a grant to do a stand-up show?
To do a stand-up performance.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I know sketch comedians in Vancouver who have applied for grants and have had to be very creative in their language mm-hmm. because as a sketch group, they can try and make it more mm-hmm. of a theatrical production, right. but they have to make it sound like theater as opposed to using words sketch, improv, right. or stand-up. And yet, we are so proud of our comedic mm-hmm. exports. You know, we talk about the people who go down to the States and become mm-hmm. famous, and everybody's very excited about those yeah. people. Yet in Canada, we're not recognized.
Yeah. So even within the arts bubble, we're not recognized as an art, which is very frustrating. Look, I don't want to run away with this interview. This is not all about that, but
no, but I view, like, what I see is I see money. Uh-huh. I literally, and I think maybe again, this is how we need to start arguing these things. I go, hey, so that stand-up show, whatever that grant you give them, think about the amount of money that it brings in. Every job in culture gets 3.8 yeah. jobs. That's a fact and stat from the government of Canada. I didn't make that
return
up.
Return on investment.
Yeah, return on investment. Also, again, you know, we're in this post-pandemic. We need to get people back together again. We need to get people engaging again, touching each other again, being around each other again. And so, you know, we need to really view culture as like a huge part of infrastructure, and a stand-up comedy show also is cheap, is one yeah. person. It's one person that fills up the audience as if it was 20 people.
Yeah, there's very, no, that's very, low, very low overhead, and I'm happy to hear you say that.
And I think it's important, too, right now in this time, to reflect on how heavily we are leaning on artists and their output right now to make life worth living. Honestly, like, I don't want to return to a world where there's no music being made or funded, that musicians can't get by, that actors can't launch shows, that comedians can't launch shows. Like, no one wants to live in that world. No one wants to live in a world where the only culture you can access is on screens or is just Netflix. No one wants to live in that world. And I think that what Ali is saying is right. If you have to speak the language of these existing politicians and talk return on investment, or, you know, speak like an economist, the facts are there. The data is there. I mean, I've applied for Ontario Media Development Corporation grants before, and that is the nuts and bolts of the application. You have to say, for every dollar you invest in this project, we hope to be generating this much, right? And that's what these industries do in Canada. Look at Schitt's Creek right now. Look at how many geniuses are in this country. All of the comedic exports that we all know that are household names, right?
They're all on Sarah's phone, all of them. Everyone except me. She doesn't have my number, but she has everyone else's. I keep trying to give it to her. She keeps rejecting it. Obviously, you're preaching to the converted here, but I hope that we can convince some people to take a look at that there's not just a benefit in terms of economics, real economic benefits, but it's feeding your soul. You might not be able to measure that, but man, there you should be. If you can't quantify it, you can certainly qualify it. All right, Ali, let's give you a chance here, my friend. I'm in your riding. You come up to my door. I'm home because there's no option to leave it right now. So I've answered the door, and this is the question I have for you as my candidate. What in your experience would you do differently than the current government?
Sure. So I want to say that the reason why I'm running is because in January 2020, I heard about a virus out of Wuhan. And at that time I was in the show Come From Away, and I started to do some digging. And very quickly, I read some preprint studies out of South Korea and Japan, and I saw very quickly that this virus spreads in the air and that this virus spreads asymptomatically. And right away, I realized that this is a virus that cannot be played footsie with. So I went to management. I said, what's the plan? They said, there's no plan. I went to the government, people that I knew, and I said, what's the plan? And I heard there's no plan. In fact, Doug Ford told us to go on March break, if you don't forget. And from that moment, I've been arguing for a tough, strong, vociferous lockdown, not against freedom, but for freedom, not against business, but for business until our vaccines come. And now we're in a situation, and this was articulated by Sarah, I think, very much, like just listening to that conversation. As somebody who is a creative person, we're not thinking about what now. We're constantly thinking about what is next. We asked Daniel Handler on our podcast. We said, hey, Daniel, what are you thinking about in return, and, you know, in terms of COVID? And that's the guy who writes Lemony Snicket. He was like, you know, I'm not thinking about now. I'm thinking about the future. So I'm having those thoughts right now. So if you ask me, like, why should, you know, Ali, why should you be the member of provincial parliament in Parkdale High Park? It's because I am literally here thinking about the future. And one of the big things that I'm thinking about right now is that ultimately one day, these vaccines will outpace the incompetence of our provincial government. But what is going to be left is a world that is forever changed. And I call it the digital present. And Sarah alluded to it a little bit. And so how do we become the masters of our own technological destiny? How do we create a profoundly digitally literate society? A society in which individuals, businesses, children speak technology as if it is an official language, so that it isn't foreign. So this is what I would do. Quality broadband, a human right, an absolute human right. Everybody in this province, and there's some issues with the riding in Parkdale High Park, certain places, kids do not have good broadband. They must have quality broadband. Businesses need to get grants and they need to get programs in order for them to digitize and digitalize their business so that they're a hybrid flower shop model, so that they can sell in-store and that they can sell online, and that Amazon doesn't win. Shopping local cannot just be an act of altruism. We are human beings. I wish we were altruistic. We wouldn't be in these issues if you weren't. So how do we make shopping local both convenient and an issue of community? And then the final thing is, I need to make sure that every single child that graduates high school knows how to code a computer. It is imperative. It is absolute. These are the jobs of the future. These are the next businesses are going to be made through that. And even if you don't decide to go in computer programming, there's a lot of studies, A, that says, you know, GDP growth is tied to broadband. So let's make sure that happens. But kids who learn how to code increase their cognitive abilities, their reasoning abilities, their rational abilities, and their creative abilities. And so we need to make this happen. Because if we don't, we're again going to be like, wait a second, what happened to all the jobs? Wait a second. Location is going to stop mattering anymore. So if we can create an entire society that speaks technology as if it's an official language, then you have businesses saying, hey, where are we going to hire people? We're going to hire them from Ontario. We're going to hire them from Ontario. We're going to hire them from Ontario. That's really what I think about. I want jobs, opportunity, and I don't want us to like meet the moment all the time. I kind of want the moment to meet us ready, because the world moves very quickly. And if we're not on top of it, we're screwed. We're screwed.
There's your motto right there. And it's
meet the moment.
No, the last one. If we don't meet it, we're screwed. I like that one.
We're screwed.
I liked thinking of what's happening next. That's like Gretzky. Don't go where the puck is. Go where the puck's going to be. To put it for hockey terms.
Nice one, Patterson. Woo.
Thanks for that. And I wish you all the best. Ali, why don't we give you a shot at those final two questions,
sure,
if you don't mind.
Love it.
Finish these sentences for me, please, Ali Moman. The Canadian star system is...
incoming.
I love it.
I like your optimism.
Thinking of the future. He's very consistent. And being the next door neighbor to the United States is like...
a shit show.
I love it. Never lose that honesty. Please, even if you get elected, don't be like, if you're on, just be like, you know what? Let's be honest. We want to deal with them, but they're a bit of a shit show.
It's a bit of a shit show.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Diana, do you have anything to add?
No, I'm still reeling from that idea of every kid graduating high school knowing how to code. Because I think back to when I was going into grade 8, I wanted to go into drama. And my mom was like, yeah, okay, but you're also going to learn to type. And I remember thinking, why do I need to learn how to type? And now I'm really glad that, you know, I know how to type. Because it was so important to not only my education, mm-hmm, but just surviving in the world. And, you know, 50 years ago, that probably wasn't as big of a deal, you know, but it things change. The world changes and this is where it's going. So learn these skills. It's far more important.
Skate to where the puck is going. Yeah, I'll say one final thing. You know, Steve Jobs, the final public statement he made before he passed, he put a slide up and it was technology intersecting with the liberal arts. And he said on stage, and this is the most profitable, most successful company of all time. And he goes, at Apple, technology is not enough. Mm-hmm. It's when technology intersects with the liberal arts, when it intersects with the humanities, when it intersects with arts, that's when the heart sings. That is when the heart sings. And, you know, we have this whole thing that we think that we could solve everything with STEM, science, technology, engineering, math. And I know I just talked about, you know, making sure everyone codes, but we also need a little bit of A in there. We need STEAM. You know, we need steam.
Arts,
we need
steam.
Full steam ahead.
I was trying to figure out where the A fit. I was like, what does A stem mean? I'm spelling it wrong. Ali, thank you so much. Sarah, thank you so much for introducing us.
Thank you, Ali. I'm so excited.
Thanks, Sarah,
about what you're going to do when you win.
And everyone out there, please continue to follow Sarah Sleen. Ali Moman, we will put up the website information for everyone to get a hold of both
you,
Sarah. Best of luck in the Junos.
Thanks,
best
Diane.
And in the Canadian Screen Awards.
And Canadian, I didn't even know that. And in the SOCAN nominations as well. Ali, best of luck, obviously. And thank you for helping us figure out a little bit of the Canadian star system, of which you are both a big part. So thank you.
Thanks so much, Steve and Diana.
Thank you.
The Canadian Star System is produced by Diana Francis and Steve Patterson in association with the Apostrophe Podcast Network. If you'd like more information on today's guests, please visit our website at canadianstarsystem.ca, where you can find links to their work and their socials. Speaking of socials, you can follow at Canadian Star Pod and at Apostrophe Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter,
and be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Our editor and sound technician is Donovan Deschner of Fracture Ephema Productions. Music by Mark Camilleri of Imagine Sound Studios. Special thanks to Terry O'Reilly, Debbie O'Reilly, Callie O'Reilly, and Nancy Patterson, who is an honorary O'Reilly.
So give it up for these good nerds, because our self-promotion sucks. And if they went away, you sure wouldn't miss them.
Stu.co.
The Canadian Star System.
Make it clean with Sarah Sleen. Sarah Sleen not actually included.
I have a feeling that'll be our fake ad.
It just
for the
writes
episode.
Itself, yes, not, yeah. Doesn't it?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.